Are you ready to go tripping? Well, strap on your life jackets. We're heading up the French River in a canoe with a paddle on this episode of Brio TV, the podcast. Every year at this time, we go tripping thanks to my guest on today's episode, Mitch Azaria. He's the executive producer behind these wonderful immersive documentaries that have taken us all over the province of Ontario. This is his fifth in 5 years, and it's called Tripping the French River. It puts viewers at the front of a cedar-stripped canoe for a three-hour paddle, starting in Lake Nipissing and eventually leading into the northern shore of Georgian Bay. Along the way, there's plenty of pop-up information to help viewers learn that the river and the canoe are essential ingredients to the formation of Canada. But never mind that. These are those rare TV treats that make you want to shut off the TV and go and explore nature. The documentary premieres Sunday, April 21st on TVO. It's on TVO Today, and it's also can be seen on YouTube. Here he is, Mitch Azaria. It's good to see you again. And I really,
and you too.
Yeah, and enjoyed the latest installment, the fifth one, Tripping the French River, which is going to premiere April 21st on TV Ontario. It's another 3 hour real time trip in a fabulous part of Ontario. So, congratulations for that.
Thank you. I mean, we're excited. I'm glad you liked it because, you know, every one of these, I worry if they work or not. So it's good to hear that you liked it.
Yeah, and they're all unique. That's one thing I like about them. And I really love this series. You and I have talked, I think, for everyone, right from that first beautiful mahogany boat ride down the Rideau Canal. And I love that the point of view that you play with it every time. This one is unique in that it is basically a canoe trip, and it is in a region that is far less explored. I mean, you've gone to remote corners of Ontario before, but this is probably the least traveled, right?
Yeah, I think of the programs we've done, as you said, five. This is the most remote, and yet the in some ways, you know, really accessible for Southern Ontario. So it has this feeling, and you can find yourself, because it's 110 kilometer river, you can find yourself feeling like you're so many different channels. You can make it a completely remote, quiet trip, or you can, you know, go down the main channels that the voyageurs went down and see all these cottages owned by, you know, Americans built just before the war.
Yeah. And part of that trip is portaging, right?
Yeah. And, you know, we, because, you know, we're, you know, in the end, we're a television series. We had to make the star of the program, the red, you know, cedar strip canoe, the star, but it's also maybe the heaviest canoe I've ever been around. And as much as our paddlers were very capable, this canoe was extremely heavy. And there were points where the entire film crew were, you know, were portaging it through the woods to get from, you know, one spot to another.
Well, let's put it in perspective. How long a canoe is that?
That was a 16-foot prospector.
Wow.
It had been repainted so many times that the paint alone probably was 20 pounds.
my dad used to know a guy who ran, he had a canoe company in Peterborough when I was young, long time ago, wooden canoes that were handmade, beautiful, but you're right, heavy. And so that would be a lot to lift.
Yeah. And, you know, you mentioned Peterborough. That's where the Canadian Canoe Museum is.
Oh, okay. Yeah, see, we're learning all the time.
And like a remarkable place.
Yeah, I bet. You know, that's one of the great things about this series, Tripping. You let viewers along for this three-hour ride. You inform and educate with all these great factoids that pop up on screen. What was among the most surprising things you learned about the French River area?
I think how historic it was, and I'm a history guy, and when I'm somewhere that has a deep history, I feel it before I even start to read about it. And to think that we were on the same waters that, you know, of course, Aboriginal people have been for 10,000 years, and who guided, you know, the great, you know, European explorers. And but to just know that the channel that we were going through, that, you know, if I kind of close my eyes, that I can imagine, you know, hundreds of voyageurs, you know, singing songs and traveling down, and, you know, Champlain going down, and that part I just, you know, absolutely love. And but, you know, these voyageurs, they were characters, you know, they were little guys. You had to be little because you couldn't take up, you know, space in the canoe, because that was for, you know, for beaver pelts. And and, you know, they were little machines, like, for, you know, for 16 hours a day, they were paddling, you know, stopping, you know, every 3 hours for a pipe full of tobacco and, you know, another, you know, piece of food. And, you know, there were stories that they would eat up to 8 pounds of meat a day to, you know, sort of fuel themselves. I mean, can you imagine?
What that would that be? 8 pounds?
8 pounds.
Holy smokes. If I eat 8 ounces now, I'm ready to get stand up. That's amazing. And it is interesting on the series here, as you have done on each of these, you have these animated segments that imagine or help viewers imagine what life was like. So you see a sequence of, I think, Champlain in a canoe with a couple of First Nations paddlers. And I remember looking at that thinking, yeah, those guys are the forgotten people of these history stories. It's like Mount Everest, you know, people can name the Sir Edmund Hillary, but not the Sherpa guide who brought him there and maybe got there first, you know?
Yeah. Right? And that's, you know, I mean, you're right. That's the untold story in all of, you know, maybe older Canadian history, our generation of Canadian history, that we learned about, you know, these explorers. Now, what we didn't realize is, you know, the trails they were taking were originally animal trails. And then the Aboriginal people realized that those were obviously the, you know, the easiest way to get from one place to another. Water, of course, was really easy to travel on. Aboriginal people knew this long ago. But the explorers were latecomers. I mean, they were real, real latecomers. And they were being, you know, guided, you know, taken care of, fed by, you know, the First Nations people. It wasn't, you know, it seems a shame that we know that, like you said, we know the names of the explorers, but we don't know the names of the great people that, you know, that helped them, not help them, that did all of the exploring for them.
Who took them there.
Yeah.
One of the great facts I learned watching this episode of Tripping was that there was a consideration, I think way back in Laurier's day, of building an international, an amazing waterway, something that would rival the size of the Panama Canal along that route, right?
Yeah, I mean, if you think about it, so it connects, the St. Lawrence connects to, you know, the Ottawa River. The Ottawa connects to the Mattawa. The Mattawa goes into Nipissing. The Nipissing goes to the French, and the French goes to the Great Lakes. Mm-hmm. So here's this sort of natural waterway, you know, like the Panama Canal, like the Suez Canal. I mean, the Panama Canal, 95% of it is, you know, is naturally, you know, occurring water. It was only, you know, 5% of it that was sort of human made. And this would have been the same thing, except you would have ruined, you know, all of those rivers, you know, including the French, which is, you know, somewhat of a, you know, of a pristine river. Yeah. You would have ruined it for this, you know, this channel. And they studied it for a long time, and they were very serious about building it. And it was only because of, you know, rail travel that it didn't.
Right.
I mean, if the rail doesn't happen, the French River isn't what we know, either is the Ottawa, either is, you know, the Mattawa.
And is that rail line part of the Trans-Canada Railroad that eventually went through there?
Yeah, there was actually a stop on the French River where kind of Highway 69 crosses the French River. Mm. That's there was a rail stop there, and that sort of opened up the French River to tourism and allowed for lodges, because now all of a sudden you could get, you know, materials and people there quite easily. I don't know when that station was taken out, but you know, it hasn't been there for at least 5 or 6 decades.
Wow. So the rail lines are no longer running through there.
They're not running. They run through there, but don't stop there anymore.
Okay.
They used to have a beautiful old station right on the river.
That's a shame. What I was curious, though, on part of the trip, you show a couple of lodges, and one I think was built by maybe the rail lines. I'm not get this straight, but damn, I wanted to get out of the canoe and visit those lodges, Mitch. Were you tempted to do something like that?
Yeah. So we stayed at a great lodge called the Bear's Den Lodge. And I mean, we do a little story about it because it is, you know, I love these old school lodges. This is a lodge that, in fact, part of the lodge was built on the timbers of an old logging town that was once had 1,500 people and, you know, is been abandoned for almost 100 years. But this lodge, you walk in and you think, this is what a lodge should be, right? I mean, it's just such a beautiful classic fishing lodge. It's family style eating. It's run by a family. Yeah. And that's the sort of hardcore, you know, fishing lodge. Then at the other end is the one that, you know, you were talking about, which is a lodge called the Lodge at Pine Cove. And this is like, it's like a yoga retreat. I mean, it's just, you know, when the guy was taking us through, he said, you know, in the morning, in the morning, you will be left a hamper and the hamper will have breakfast. And we were thinking, a hamper? Oh, like a basket, right? So in the morning, you get this basket outside your, you know, perfectly appointed cabin that has, you know, a glass of, you know, or a jar of juice, a jar of yogurt, a jar of fresh fruit, a jar of granola, you know. And meanwhile, at the fishing camp, you know, you're getting homemade sausages and eggs.
Nice.
And bacon and potatoes. Yeah. You know, you really want, you know.
More like the 8 pounds of meat diet from Champlain days. That's a riot. It's funny, you know. There's a great family lodge. My family has had a cottage on the Bruce, I think I've mentioned, for you know, all my life. And there's a couple of lodges there that at one point were pretty remote, I guess. Wildwood is gone and Evergreen Lodge is still there. And that's part of the charm, as you say, it's that it's family run, but also it's the food. I think the families go back every year because of the great, if you know, you can have seconds, you can have thirds. The food is what brings people back every year.
Well, they say that we can't promise you fish, but we can promise you a good meal.
Right? That's all right.
The meals are outstanding. The story times are great. The sitting around, you know, when we were there, Sil Apps was there, and
really.
and he apparently he and his family have been going to this one lodge for, you know, 50 years.
Wow. That is wild. Sil Apps, former Toronto Maple Leaf captain, right?
Yeah. Heck of a hockey player.
That's right. I remember my dad had lots of stories. Oh, we're heading for some rapids. Back again after these short messages. Well, time once again to speak with Sweet Emily Gagné from Hollywood Sweet. Emily, how are you today?
I'm great, Bill.
Oh, I don't know. I saw your banners. I saw the ads. It looked kind of scary, this one show. What's going on?
Yeah, it's called Until I Kill You, and it is a UK true crime drama that tells the story of Delia Bomber, who survived a bunch of violent attacks from her boyfriend, John Sweeney, who was, spoiler alert, a murderer. So if you're into true crime stuff and you're into UK dramas, this is for you. And this show, it's available on demand right now. But if you want to tune in week to week like old school, you can do that starting April 18th.
All right. Now, what if you're like me, you're scared of shows with a title where people get killed? What else you got?
Well, you know what? We've got the new season of A Year in Film, which is our original series, which is about different iconic years in cinema. So we're talking about 1977 this year. So that's like Star Wars, Close Encounters, Slapshot, Eraserhead. Also, 1988, a personal favorite year of mine, Beetlejuice, Child's Play, Working Girl, Coming to America, 1991, 2000. So these are all just, you know, film experts talking about the iconic films of these years.
I saw Star Wars and Annie Hall the day they opened in 1977. So I'm going to want to tune into that one for sure.
You are. And it's going to be April 11th is that first episode at 9 p.m. And then the rest of the episodes will premiere the following days, the 12th, 13th, and 14th.
All right. Fantastic. Go back to the days of my youth, 1977, with Hollywood Suite this month. See you, Emily.
Thank you, Bill.
And we're back with Mitch Azaria. We should tell people, just in case, exactly where this is, the French River. It starts, as you mentioned, in Lake Nipissing, I think, right?
Yeah, it starts in Lake Nipissing and runs almost, you know, completely southbound into Georgian Bay. So it enters Georgian Bay at the Boustang Islands, which, you know, it's 110 kilometers. It's the thing about it is there's so many different channels. So the top of the river almost seems like a bunch of puddled lakes more than a river. And then when you get down to the bottom, as you're getting to Georgian Bay, it's these narrow channels. I mean, channels so that, I mean, you saw in the program, you could hold your hands out on either side and touch the banks, but they're gorgeous because they're dug out of, you know, the shield, and they're just absolutely stunning. And of course it's called a flat and drop river where, you know, if for much of it it's fairly flat water, and then you get into a little dip of fast water, and then it's, you know, nice flat water. So it means that you can kind of go up and down the river with almost the same amount of effort. So it's really popular for canoeists. I mean, a lot of canoeists will tell you that was their first, you know, trip. That was their first trip because it's such an approachable river.
Because there's nowhere where there's like a 200-foot drop or anything, right? It's pretty even.
I think the whole river only drops, you know, 20 meters in its 100-kilometer run.
The thing about Ontario is it's all fairly even. I know I'm always surprised, like around Flesherton is the high point of Ontario, right?
I think you're right.
You know, it's a big, great big pool table. You know, it's different. It's a fun trip. Tell me about the two in the canoe, because you and I talked last and I said, hey,
I knew you were going to bring this up.
You know, I know a guy, and I didn't think this was going to happen because it was change your show. You know, you don't want the show to be about a personality, but Ron James loves to canoe. He's a funny guy, and he would be an interesting, but that wouldn't be tripping. That would be something else. And is that part of what your thinking was in steering this to another direction?
Yeah, because, you know, and you're right. I mean, I love Ron James. And can you imagine the dialogue, right? I mean, it would just be, you know, but then you're following Ron James's trip as opposed to having your own trip. I mean, right. As you clearly said, right? This documentary series allows the viewer to experience the river, you know, that they're in, you know, in the bow of the canoe, and they're seeing it, you know, just, you know, and I think the Ron James would, I mean, I think that would be a wonderful program. I'll pitch it to DVO, but you're right. It's a different program, isn't it? Because now you're Ron James rather than yourself.
Yeah, no, he would be doing shtick and commentary. He's a wise man. It would be very interesting. I think it would be fun, but you're right. You got to be in the canoe. And who are the folks that are in your canoe? It sounds like there are First Nations voices, Aboriginal voices, at least one of them, right?
Guy and Brigitte, they're both from Lake Nipissing. Both grew up on the river. Guy's a guide on the river, a fishing guide. She's just retired as a school teacher. Avid canoeists, absolute lovers of the river, have both spent tons of time on it. But we keep them anonymous in a way, just because we want the viewer to be experiencing it. But right. These guys, you hear them, because as many times as they've been down the river, they're still awed when they look at a place like Eagle's Nest, this 90-meter cliff face, or when they're going through the Voyageur Channel and they're imagining what it was like to see these canoes come through, and then a beaver pops off the shore, and then they see an eagle fly. Like, no matter how many times you go down a river, yeah, like that, there's always experiences that that are unique to that one moment.
Yeah, you mentioned the beaver. There's a little animated sequence where you sort of show viewers how complex their habitat is, that they build rooms, basically, right, for various functions. It's quite interesting.
I always thought it'd be a great kids series, right? Beavers, because you don't want a human like animals, but they are human like. They care deeply for their their children. They have these really cool lodges with separate rooms, little kitchen, little sleeping area, and they're really loyal to their kits, right? They spend 2 years with them. But they're busy beavers, right? They cut down 215 trees a day,
year. Amazing.
I think they're truly busy guys. The other cool thing about a beaver that I never knew is they have a third eyelid.
Really?
Yeah. And their third one is transparent. So when they go underwater, they can see perfectly with this third, transparent lid that covers, it's like having your own goggles underwater.
I didn't know that. That's amazing. I was surprised to learn that they had their own little IKEA furniture in the lodge. No.
Couldn't put them together, though.
Yeah, you were tempted, I bet. It is fascinating. Did you use the same folks who have animated scenes on your other tripping shows?
Yeah, the same. Not the original. The first three were done by Matt Knight. The second two were done by another gentleman. But it's been sort of a seamless progression, because this guy is just so talented, and it's amazing how much time it takes to build those, to get the beavers to look realistic. Yeah. Absolutely. And then to get the shot that we know is going to do a match frame into it. So, we're thinking the entire time, when we get to a beaver hut, we're going to approach it in a certain way so that our, animator Mark Alberts can beautifully match that shot with an animation. So it's all one continuous, Mark Alberts, who's our animator, the greatest thing about him is his nephew is the captain of the Montreal Canadiens.
What? Suzuki?
That's what I said. Suzuki, yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
That is really something. That is something. He's having a great year.
He's having a great year.
Yeah. Well, it's fun. Now, were you, obviously you would have been there working on this at night. My wonder was, when you look up at the sky in a place like that, the stars must be unbelievable, right?
I think part of it is part of the dark space program too. But yeah, I mean, I have a 20-year-old nephew, Oscar, and he loves fishing. He loves the outdoors. And I kept trying to get him up there, because it's such a special place.
Yeah.
It's such a special place for the night sky, for the, the fishing, the canoe. I mean, just and the people that you meet on the river. Like, I was really, really surprised. There were a lot of young folks out there canoeing, and a lot of new Canadians, and of course a lot of Americans. But you just see the joy, right? You see these folks, canoeing along, and they may not have the stroke right, and they may be struggling a little. They may be portaging, six times rather than two, because they don't have the proper gear. But they're so happy to be out there. You could just tell, right? There's this this amazing feeling. It's like, I remember Peter Truman said, you know, about the Arctic, that you don't have to go there, you know, to know. Just knowing that it's there gives you comfort. And it's the same thing when you go up north, when you come back, just to know that it's there, is like this really comfortable place to go to all the time.
I would think it's like Nirvana, just to be that far from cell phone coverage, you know, like, right. It's like you have to canoe and fish. You can't look at your stupid phone all day. And that must be heaven. I think, you know, it would be pretty cool. Or is there cell phone coverage up there?
There's no cell phone coverage.
Yeah, that's wonderful.
It's a beautiful thing.
When can we leave? It's pretty good. Rue the day that they built towers in the French River. Where you mentioned fishing, did you get a chance to drop a line while you're on this trip?
No, and I'm an avid fisherman, and you know, as I said, Guy, the canoeist, is that's all he was thinking about everywhere we're going, you know, that he wanted to fish. But I didn't. The big fish up there is muskie. And the lodges will have a board, and they'll say, you know, what the largest, you know, from bass all the way to muskie is, you know, northern pike and, you know, dory or pickerel. And Sil Apps was leading the, I think he was leading the pickerel lottery for, you know, for the summer.
Wow.
But yeah, I mean, the big fish that people are coming up there for is muskie. They have like world class muskie fishing.
And you can like fish all your life and maybe catch one, right?
Yeah, I mean, they call it the fish of 10,000 casts, right? You know, your chance of, you know, getting into one is rare, and then landing it is another thing. So you got to be a patient fisherman.
We got pictures up at the cottage of my grandfather, William Lewis Brio, with a muskie he caught near Peterborough, and my dad too, when he was very young, not yet 20, I don't think, but they're just great big pike, right? They're just they can weigh up to 28 pounds or pretty huge, I think,
up to 60 pounds.
Oh my goodness. Wow. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. Fresh water. I mean, they can take a duck out of the water.
That's fantastic. Now you're following this, you've got drones obviously for these overhead shots again, and breathtaking shots, just beautiful. But you're also obviously in a boat following behind the canoe.
Yeah, so I mean, and that's always the challenge. The drone work is Peter Warren. He's amazing. I mean, the reason why he's good is because he's been a cinematographer his whole life, but he's also a pilot. And so the idea of flying a drone is easy for him. So he doesn't have to think of the flying, and he doesn't have to think of the framing. So usually if you have a drone person, it's a two-person crew. One person's flying the drone, the other person's sort of framing the shot. He does both, but he does them both instinctively. So all he does these... He can follow a piece of action. He can follow a canoe going down a river for 10 minutes without, you know, breaking a bead of sweat. Like he's got a really unique talent to do that. The following on the boat was challenging because we had this new camera. Each year I'm trying to come up with a new, better camera to kind of make the experience better. And we found this camera called a 4D. It's made by the same people that make all of the drones. And the beautiful thing is it's got stabilization on every axis. First camera that can do this. Yeah. So what we wanted to do was we wanted to put people into, you know, fast water without sort of making them bring up breakfast. You know, we wanted to make it a really smooth experience for them. And we found this camera, and then we thought, okay, well, how are we going to work with it? Well, we can put, you know, Peter in the front with it, but, you know, he's got to really trust the guy behind him to get him through this fast water. So we found a professional paddler that we could trust implicitly, you know, to keep us dry going through the fast water, and then get these, you know, shots that, you know, seem rather smooth for the kind of water they're going through.
Oh, incredibly smooth. I thought that was a drone just flying really low, you know, like I was, that's extraordinary. It's very smooth. You know, I remember many, many years ago seeing like North of Superior or whatever at Ontario Place, right? And on that giant IMAX screen, you're in a canoe and you're jostling everywhere. You're almost ready to lose your breakfast watching that movie. Nowadays, as you've demonstrated, you can do that in a way that you can really see what's happening. It's beautiful.
Yeah, I mean, technology now is, look at new iPhones, right? They have stabilization in them. Like
incredible.
Crazy stabilization.
Wow.
That's
funny.
No, this is a beautiful camera. And it's designed, it's made by the same guys that Ronin that make the drones. So they had the technology for the Air. Now they brought it into a handheld camera.
Wow. We'll be right back after this short message. Well, what's new this month on Super Channel? Well, giddy up for the 11th season of When Calls the Heart, found exclusively in Canada on Super Channel Heart and Home. There are, of course, many burning questions from last season's shocking finale. School teacher Elizabeth, Erin Krakow, she's saddled up with her Mountie man, Nathan Grant, played by former Brio TV podcast guest Kevin McGarry. Can these two ride off into the sunset and still manage parenting obstacles, huh? There are plenty of other obstacles to unravel as Hope Valley heads into the 1920s. Hardys and McGarrys can look forward to 12 new season 11 episodes. And don't forget, all 111 binge-worthy past episodes are available on Super Channel On Demand. Remember, Super Channel, an all-Canadian service, is available via most cable providers across the country, as well as streaming live and on demand with Amazon Prime Video channels and Apple TV Plus. You can also check out Super Channel Plus, available now on the Roku platform in Canada. What's new on Paramount Plus? Meet a Gentleman in Moscow, premiering exclusively on the streaming service at the end of March. Based on a best-selling novel, the series stars Ewan McGregor as Count Alexander Rostov. The good news, he's spared immediate execution in the aftermath of the Russian Revolution. The bad news, however, he's banished to an attic room in the opulent Hotel Metropole, threatened with death if he ever sets foot outside again. So what's a comrade to do? Rostov enters a whole new world of emotional discovery where he gradually learns the true value of friendship, family, and love. Mary Elizabeth Winstead also stars as glamorous actress Anna Urbanova. And remember, there's a mountain of premium entertainment for audiences of all ages, including programming from Showtime, BET, CBS, Comedy Central, MTV, Nickelodeon, Paramount Pictures, and the Smithsonian Channel, all on Paramount Plus. Here he is again, Mitch Azaria. Was this trip made a little later than usual? Is more into the fall this time, or is that usually when you go?
No, I mean, yeah, we the weather caught up to us a little bit. We did do an early summer shoot, but then in the end, we went back for some pickups, and it was a little later. But we also did two kind of cool transitions. We did those two match dissolves.
Yeah.
Yeah, you transition.
So you actually went back for that, did you? You got a winter shot.
Yeah.
That is very cool. So I'm sorry to cut you off, Mitch. So describe what that is for viewers.
Yeah. So what we wanted to do, and we did this in one of the other programs, is we wanted to do a match shot, meaning that the shot is seamless between one season and another. And we do it twice. We do it from summer to autumn, and then we do from summer to winter. And the beautiful thing about drones, again, these DJI guys are crazy good designers, is you can put waypoints on the drone. So you fly the drone, and you as you're flying it, you're constantly putting in GPS waypoints on your route. And then you can come back, you know, a year from now, 6 months from now, 10 months from now, and tell the drone, you literally press the button, say, drone, fly that exact same route again.
Wow.
And they do. Now, the match isn't perfect because the clouds will, you know, yeah, be slightly different or whatever. Now there's a boat that wasn't there, but the actual routing of the drone is absolutely identical. So it makes, you know, technology is making what we do a lot easier, but you have to understand it and use it and not overuse it, right? There's a tendency when a new technology comes out, you know, when drones first came out, every program, you know it right, better than most, right? Every program was over-droning everything. And right, all of a sudden that was a big production, you know, detail.
But that you could preset the framing is extraordinary. I thought, I remember thinking, well, you'd have to sort of mess with the framing to match it. You'd have to physically later zoom in and zoom out, but you can actually match it. That's extraordinary. Looks great. Wow. So yeah. What kind of a boat are you following behind in? Is it similar to,
It was a guy that had the only boat that on the top of the river, we could work off of a huge, big fishing boat. But on the bottom of the river, and I should actually put this this footage up, the guy that took us in the bottom of the river, because it's all fast water, he grew up there as a kid, knows it intimately. And he's got a boat that's designed so that you can go back up fast water. So it's a jet boat, doesn't have a propeller in the water, but it's also flat bottomed, which means that it really kind of, you know, it, without a hull, it's like all over the water, because it's just sort of, you know, moving back and forth. But it's the only boat on the river that can run back up, because we'd have to reshoot scenes, you know, coming right, down, you know, coming down through the fast water. And if we didn't have that boat, it meant spending the entire day coming back up the back routes, right? So he would do it. And he told us that he used to do it at night, like in pitch black, run those rapids up backwards, wow, like up the fast water. So he would just do it just to try and, you know, make us, you know, mess our pants, right? Like he would do it like crazy high speeds on the way back. And like the first time he did it, like all of us were talking, and then all of a sudden it just, you know, when you go completely silent because you're all really, really scared and you can't get the next word out. And then he kind of turned to us and smiled, right? Because he knew exactly what he was up to.
Wise guy.
Wise guy.
Did you have any close calls in the rapids with the canoe?
We had a couple of moments where and there's what you'll see, it's in the program, going through a thing called Devil's Door. Mm. And, you know, our professional paddler, who's a YouTube guy, Richard Tosh, crazy, you know, came out of the military, like just one of the most capable people, like one of those guys that you would just trust your life to. And Devil's Door, so he pre-scouted it and ran it and said, yeah, I can get you through this. But it's a hard, it's the water's pulling you left into a wall, and you have to kind of come out of it to the right. And on the time that we filmed it, you see it in the program. I mean, he missed by, you know, I mean, it had to be an inch. Like, I mean, wow, it was so close to the wall. And yeah, the crew would have been swimming. So that was as close as we got, because, you know, Richard had us in good hands.
Oh my goodness. And you may not want to be swimming in the French River in September, right? Or wherever. It'd be pretty chilly, I would think.
Yeah, I mean, and you know, as prepped as these guys were, you know, there's a tendency to hold on to things that are really valuable. And I would have imagined Peter just holding onto the camera, you know, like, all the way to the bottom of the river.
Wow. Well, yeah. And Mitch, what's it like? Is it quiet? You know, is it do you just hear natural sounds, you know, and to be that far up the river, is it just a different experience?
It's, you know, I love that, right? I have this noise sensitivity. I was saying it to my wife the other day. I I love quiet, and I think that's, you know, one of the things that I love most about being, you know, out of doors and in nature is just hearing nothing but, and the bird sounds up there. It's crazy amount a number of birds, but also tons of eagles, right? And wow, that's really surprised me, like tons of eagles. Like you cannot spend more than 2 hours up there without seeing a bald eagle.
Wow a lot of hawks too, I bet.
Tons of hawks, and I love hawks.
I've noticed, even just coming to Orangeville, just the amount of blackbirds and crows is significantly different. Again, like with the stars, I even in that 40 kilometers between here and Brampton, the night sky is so, looking up right away, you could see so much more because there just wasn't as much peripheral light, right, flooding in from Toronto and everywhere else.
Yeah.
It must be very dark up there at night. That's great. Is it too early to ask what's next, where you're headed after this?
Well, I mean, the thing with TVO is, as an independent producer, and we, you know, we love TVO, TVO loves us, but, they never know what their funding is going to be. If we're fortunate enough to get a sixth installment, I'd love to, you know, introduce Ontarians to a place they know well but don't know well, which is the Muskoka Lakes. I think that those would be wonderfully done in a beautiful electric mahogany boat. Take them, you know, to the places they think they know, you know, Millionaire's Row and Billionaire's Row and all of that. But also like the beautiful hidden corners of you know, really, you know, untouched parts of all three of those lakes.
Wow. I'm in. Let me in that boat. That's a great idea. I just love it. And again, I don't want to get all Ron James on us again, but you can drop in on Martin Short. You know, you can, there's some opportunities there. You know, that would be kind of cool. But I know that when I was a youngster, we had friends, the guy who was the mayor of Orangeville here, Gord Breeden, he had a cottage on Lake of Bays. We would go there every summer to visit them, and it was just fun getting to know that area. And now it's just Disneyland. It's so different, but it would be really, really cool to do that. So I hope you get that opportunity. And I like the idea of going somewhere because you've been to a number of remote places, Train 148 especially, and there's populated parts of Ontario, like probably 99% of Ontarians have never been on the French River. But even if you've crossed the bridge at Windsor, you probably aren't that familiar with the area around there, or that Paley Island, or, you know, there's so many wonderful opportunities, isn't there?
This province is remarkable. I mean, one of the programs that I've always thought that, you know, we could do is to do the entire province as if we were, flying it. And, I said to the head of TVO, you know, it's as far to the most northern part of Ontario, which is Fort Severn. It's as far from Toronto to Fort Severn as it is from Toronto to Atlanta, Georgia.
Wow.
It's 1,400 kilometers.
I bet. Yeah. Amazing.
And you just never think of this province in its full breadth, right? And that there's, you know, a polar bear park, you know, in Ontario, on Hudson Bay, right? I mean, it's a massive, beautiful province. And we'd love to continue to show it to Ontarians.
I think Paley Island is further south than the northern tip of California.
I think you're right, which is amazing.
Yeah, it is amazing. You know,
it's amazing.
You know, why aren't we all summering at Paley Island?
Yeah.
Well, Mitch, congratulations again. I love these shows, and I'm absolutely looking forward to the 21st of April. Is that the date? What am I get it straight here? Tell me.
Yes.
These shows have been five of them now. Well, it's important to have a series, isn't it? To have an inventory like that.
It is, and you know, each program has its own challenges, but there's also the we have this comfort of having done it before. So, you know, we try and, you know, push things each time, you know, make the animations a little more, you know, bold. We try and, you know, make sure that the, you know, the technology allows viewers to really, really feel like they're, you know, they're immersed in, you know, in the place that we are, in the most comfortable way. So, yeah, I mean, it's been great. And we really hope that we can, you know, we can continue to do these. I just love it. And our crew loves it. Right. And they look forward to this every summer.
Yeah, me too. They're fantastic. Congratulations again. It's a wonderful 3-hour trip on the French River. Mitch Azaria, thanks once again. And, all best with everything, and hope you get some fishing in if you didn't get any in on the French River.
Thanks, Bill, and appreciate your continued support on these.
Oh, my pleasure. Take care. Thanks, as always, to producer Phil Hong for paddling us through another smooth sailing episode. Thanks as well to publicist Jill Spitz for setting up this episode with Mitch Azaria. I always have to thank BJ Del Conte, Paul Boudreau, and the rest of the Crispy Critters, as well as my piano-playing pal from high school, Steve Dudley, for the music heard on these podcasts. Finally, thanks to you, listener. Hope you will paddle back and join us again next time. I'm Bill Brio. Thanks for listening.